Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Medicare Advantage Update conference call. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. With us today, we have Mr. Tony Hausner and Mr. Craig Miner, both with CMS. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Janice Acar for opening remarks. Please go ahead, Janice.
Well, I think I already covered that, so we're ready to move on to Tony.
Okay, you want me to start, Janice?
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, greetings, everybody. Sorry to be doing this via teleconference, but our workload is pretty crushing these days, as you well imagine, both implementing aspects already of the Medicare Modernization Act and then gearing up for next January's start. I'm going to talk about quality improvement for the Medicare Advantage plans, and if you're on the first slide, I'll be talking about Subpart D of Title II as it was published in the Federal Register on January 28th of this year. Craig Miner will talk in a few minutes about the quality improvement part for prescription drug plans and the prescription drug benefit as it applies to the Medicare Advantage program, so I won't be covering that. And the other thing I wanted to kind of provide as an introductory comment is, as our administrator, Mark McClellan, has stated, he considers CMS a public health agency, and that has an awful lot of implications, particularly puts a great emphasis on quality of care from his perspective and the agency's perspective. Turn to the next slide. What I'm going to focus on for most of the talk is the requirements for the HMOs and PPOs, both the local and regional PPOs. And there are three areas of requirements for the most part. The Chronic Care Improvement Projects, also known as CCIP. Now, I want to differentiate that from the fee-for-service pilot program in the same area. And it's now labeled Medicare Health Support, but we're talking about the CCIP requirements for the Medicare Advantage plans, also known as disease management. Talk about the quality improvement projects, and I'll talk about performance measures reporting. And all of this is spelled out in the rules and further discussed in the preamble to the final rule. So go to the next slide. Focus now on CCIP. As you all know, it is disease management. The rules are pretty much spell out basically what was in the legislation. We didn't really add too much to that. And what we have in the rules are the first two bullets here, that you need to have methods for identifying persons with chronic conditions, and you need to have mechanisms for monitoring the services that they receive. So that's all we require in the way of regulations at this time. What we spell out in the call letter, and we'll also be putting that into the Medicare Managed Care Manual, we're updating that and hope to issue in the next few months an updated version of the manual. We're doing that in stages, the different chapters, but I've been actively working with some other staff, both who are in the room here. Debbie Larwood has also helped work on that chapter, as well as Pat Thomas and several other people in the in our agency. What we spell out in the call letter are three reporting requirements right now. One is, what diseases have you served, what services have you provided, and then what kinds of performance measures are you collecting? We're not asking you to provide the performance data at this time. All we want to know is the types of measures that you're reporting. I'll mention two other things. Go to the next slide. We certainly recommend that you look at the Section 721 fee-for-service pilot, not called Medicare Health Support, for insights, guidance. They're not requirements, but just that it's a useful program for you to have awareness of, to give you thoughts as to what to do for CCIP. The other thing I'll call your attention to is the Disease Management Association of America has quite a bit of guidance, and we think that might be a useful reference for you to be aware of and keep that in mind. Those are not requirements at this point, but we think there's some useful material there that you certainly can take into account. And we're interested very much in your input on what future directions that we might go with that component of the program and what technical assistance needs that you might have. So we'd very much want to hear from you on that. Let's turn to the next slide on quality improvement projects. This is an area that used to be called quality assessment and performance improvement. The legislation changed the title, but and it changed some of the requirements. But you all have been doing this over the last several years, so hopefully you're pretty familiar with these requirements. We continue to require that you measure both performance in clinical and non-clinical areas, that you conduct systems interventions, improve performance, and do periodic follow-up on the intervention effects. Turning to the next slide, these projects should also involve assessing performance using quality indicators, which are objective, measure outcomes, collect valid and reliable data. The interventions must achieve demonstrable improvement, and you'll be required to submit your reports to CMS. We also, in the regulations, encourage participation in the national voluntary projects. We hope to, either this year or next year, provide some national projects that you are, can participate in a voluntary basis. I should highlight that in the past, it was a mandatory requirement that you participate in the national projects. Now the projects are those that you select on your own. We will have a national project that you can choose if you want to participate in, and it would be done on a voluntary basis. And when we try to develop those national projects, we will want your input on that. Let me turn to the third major area of on the next slide, the performance measures. Most of you are required to submit, and most of you are familiar with the HEDIS, CAPS, and HOS, and all HMOs and PPOs will continue to be submitting that data, except for some of the special needs plans. We've made some exceptions that I'll talk about in a minute. The CAPS and the HOS surveys will be identical for HMOs and PPOs. On the next slide, point out that for PPOs, in the initial years, we'll be just collecting administrative data. That's what NCQA is working on right now, pilot testing HEDIS using administrative data only. We hope over time in the next few years to move towards medical records data from the PPOs. We think that's a capability, but at this point in time, especially with the new regional PPOs, we don't think they're prepared to be adding that to their data systems given all the other responsibilities they have. The HMOs will continue to submit their administrative and medical records data for in the HEDIS program. Turn next to the following slide of performance measures reporting dealing with the special needs plans, or known as SNPs. For the dual eligibles, they will have the same requirements as I've just described on performance reporting. They'll continue to, all the SNPs will have to do the CCIP, the Chronic Care Improvement Projects, and the Quality Improvement Projects. And the dual eligibles will have to continue to report the HEDIS, HOS, and CAPS measures. For the institutionalized SNPs, particularly those that are in nursing homes, they will be, they can, we've asked them to submit something like the minimum nursing home minimum data set, but there will be slight variations on that, and then some hospital measures. And we also will be able to collect the MDS minimum data set data on those through our standard administrative the MDS system. And so we will have that data to compare to other nursing home populations. For those, we've actually gotten a couple of community-based institutional-level care special needs plans, and those will be probably doing something similar to the nursing home-based ones, but it will be perhaps some variations on that. And then the other types of plans, those that are dealing with chronic diseases, we have to determine what performance measures they will be reporting. For those that are, next slide, coordinated care plans, those that are HMOs and local PPOs with an HMO license, they will have additional requirements such as providing written policies for service authorizations, having procedures for detecting over and under utilization, and they will have the same HEDIS measures as HMOs. So those local PPOs, and there are a few of them with HMO licenses, would have to submit medical records data for the HEDIS measures. Then all the Medicare Advantage plans, including private fee-for-service plans, and medical savings accounts, if we ever get any of the medical savings accounts, will have to have health information systems, annual reviews of the impact and effectiveness of quality improvement programs, and remedial action on all problems. Just let me briefly discuss the next slide, future directions. One of the things that's in the legislation is if we want to add any new performance measure systems beyond HEDIS, HAS, and CAPS, we have to submit a report to Congress justifying those new systems. Right now, we don't have any current plans to that effect, but I wanted you to be aware that's in the legislation and something that we will certainly keep in mind. One of the areas that you probably all are reading about is pay-for-performance, and I have quite a bit of discussion in the preamble to the final rule. There's quite a number of demonstrations that CMS is conducting both in the hospital and physician arena. MedPAC, the Medicare Payment Assessment Commission, has made legislative proposals concerning managed care and pay-for-performance, and particularly using HEDIS and CAPS. And then the Senate Finance Committee on June 30th, Senators Grassley and Baucus introduced legislation, pay-for-performance legislation, that includes Medicare Advantage plans. And so pay-for-performance is getting a great deal of attention both nationwide and in Washington over the past few years, and I think particularly this year, so I wanted you to all be aware of that. And our office is also looking at issues related to that, and we welcome your input on that. As I indicated, we'd like to challenge all our stakeholders to help us further develop the various standards and what your technical assistance needs are and your thoughts about how we proceed with quality assurance, quality improvement requirements. And the last slide gives you my contact information. So now let me turn it over to Craig Miner.
Thank you, Tony. Hi, my name is Craig Miner. I'm a pharmacist in the Division of Drug Plan Policy, and I'd like to go over what are the requirements in the Title I regulations with respect to Part D. And these apply to both MA plans as well as standalone prescription drug plans with respect, again, to the prescription drug benefit itself. Specifically on the slide labeled overview, I have five areas laid out, one labeled quality assurance measures and systems. We'll talk a little bit about medication therapy management, which has received quite a bit of attention, and being a pharmacist, it's something that I've been very much involved with, and it's something we believe will grow into what Congress expects it to be. We have consumer satisfaction surveys. electronic prescribing, I'll touch on briefly and then just speak briefly to what the role we foresee for quality improvement organizations will be, at least what we know up till now. There isn't much, though, just to point out, as you'll see, there isn't much beyond the regs right now with respect to sub-regulatory guidance in the quality areas, so I'll point that out as we go along. The first topic on the next slide, quality assurance measures and systems. The first bullet point speaks to that network providers are required to comply with state pharmacy practice standards. We put that in there because basically the Part D is regulating the plans. We tried to stay away from, and I don't think it was the role of the Medicare prescription drug benefit to regulate the practice of pharmacy. So we simply put in there a requirement for plans that their providers, that they're going to contract with, they need to have something in there that requires such providers to comply with the pharmacy practice standards in the states in which they practice. The next requirement on plans is they need to have established policies and procedures for concurrent drug utilization review. Now, this is something that is pretty much the standard of practice out there today, and there are systems in pharmacy practice set up to do this. Sometimes it's referred to prospective drug utilization review because it does take place before a prescription is dispensed. The things that need to be looked at, although not limited to, would be things such as duplicate therapies, drug-drug interactions, over- and underutilization, incorrect dosages, drug allergies. Again, those are some things that need to be included in systems. The systems that are out there today do look at more things than that. We do not initially have specific reporting requirements on what we expect from plans to, you know, as far as what they're supposed to accomplish with those systems or whether they're doing a good job or bad job, however they're looking at what their providers are doing. So, again, the requirement is there to have these things done up front, but we haven't established yet exactly what we're going to be looking at to know whether they're performing these functions adequately or not. Next, we also require plans to establish policies for retrospective drug utilization review. This is a little bit different in the sense that it isn't as much focused on the specific prescription that would have been being dispensed at the time for concurrent, but rather looking at patterns of perhaps inappropriate use or misuse or unnecessary care. For instance, they can look at physician prescribing patterns to pick up on that, or perhaps specific drugs, focus on specific drugs across a population and across their patient population to determine if some of those things are being prescribed appropriately. So they'll need to have established the systems and the policies to perform that. Again, right now we do not have established measures for what we'll expect them to report to us on what they're doing, other than that they have this, you know, in place and functioning. The last bullet point on this slide speaks to internal medication error identification and reduction systems. I think this has confused some people. Originally in the proposed rule, we were talking about having mandatory external medication error reporting, but it became evident in a sense that industry wasn't ready for that and that we weren't ready to know exactly what would be asking them to report and whether it would really be of any use to improve quality, but perhaps maybe actually would work to a detriment. So instead, what we require, though, is internally that these plans have some type of system set up so that they do track the errors that they find and that they do have a process to evaluate why things are happening and what perhaps they need to change in their process. So, if you will, a continuous quality improvement process or something of the like, but it isn't that they need to externally, that their providers need to report their errors or that they need to report errors directly to CMS. Next slide. Okay. Medication therapy management, again, has garnered quite a bit of attention with respect to the quality in Part D. It probably got more comments, and probably because the pharmacy community is very eager to participate in this, but more comments than any other aspect, if you will, of the Title I proposed rule. The requirements, though, right now, at least for year one, are pretty limited to what is in the regs, so let's go through those. First of all, each plan does have to have a medication therapy management program, and they've had to submit to us a description of that program. So although we haven't told them any more specifics exactly how they need to do it, whether it's face-to-face, you know, telephone or things like that. They needed to submit to us a description of their program, and we're going over those descriptions actually right now to at least make sure they meet a minimum threshold that was spelled out to them. And again, without going further, it isn't that we spelled out what they could or couldn't do, but we need to make sure that they at least met the regulatory requirements of targeting the right people and stuff. So we'll look at that. Again, the goal of any medication therapy management program, which was spelled out in the statute, is to design, it must be designed to optimize therapeutic outcomes by improving medication use, reducing adverse drug reactions. But the key point here is that the official, if you will, medication therapy management program will be limited to targeted beneficiaries, and I'll speak to that in a following slide. The third point on here is that MTM can be provided by pharmacists or other qualified health providers. We haven't defined who they are. We're leaving that up to plans. We could assume that pharmacists will play a big role in this, but by no means is MTM just limited to pharmacists. With respect to the next slide, if you can, there's further requirements. We have the program itself. The plan must ensure that it was developed in cooperation with licensed and practicing pharmacists and physicians, whether those are their own employees or they subcontracted out for someone to develop their program for them. The plans can distinguish between the services in ambulatory versus institutional settings. Now, it isn't distinguishing between the targets, but they can distinguish between the services, which makes sense if for instance, a piece of their program is focused on compliance and they have certain things that they're doing to improve compliance. Those might not be necessary in the institutional setting versus something that could be very beneficial to impact patient care in the ambulatory setting. And then finally, there is a requirement that any fees that are established for providers must reflect the time and resources required to implement the program. Next slide. With respect to targeted beneficiaries, there were three statutory requirements that each beneficiary that could participate must meet. So it isn't one or the other. It's all three. So the person needs to have multiple diseases, be taking multiple drugs, and likely to incur a cost threshold of $4,000 for 2006. CMS set that in sub-regulatory because the statute required us to set a threshold. Now, that $4,000 is total drug cost, not just what the beneficiary spends out of pocket, but total adjudicated drug costs. And perhaps most importantly, it's likely to incur. We're not saying that someone has to hit the $4,000 mark before they can be provided, but the plans need to establish a way where they can predict who is likely to do that. Now, initially, we expect that these plans will do it on drug claims, and you can imagine that 2006, they don't even have any claims yet. So we do expect that this could take a month or two or perhaps a quarter before plans can adequately target the beneficiaries that they believe match their program requirements. With respect to multiple diseases and multiple drugs, again, plans are left with the discretion to further define that. If they want to limit MTM to, you know, people on four or more medications, that's fine. If they want to do it on eight or more medications, that's fine. They just needed to tell us that in those descriptions that I mentioned earlier. And the same with diseases. They could have it as long as someone has two diseases or more, no matter what they are, they'll target them. Or they can decide to target specific diseases as long as there's more than two that beneficiary has. Okay, we can go to the next slide. I just put out some examples here of what MTM could be, you know, patient health status assessments, basically counseling. They could, you know, speak to the patients to formulate, monitor, adjust their drug treatment plans. There's education. Special packaging was mentioned in the statute, so that could play a role in improving adherence to drug regimens, refill reminders, and the such. By no means is this an exhaustive list. It's just an idea of what we did think, or at least what we saw people considered medication therapy management to be, what's going on in today's practice, where it is going on. That's all I have with respect to medication therapy management. If we go to the next slide, again, one of the things that CMS will be doing is consumer satisfaction surveys. We'll conduct these surveys to provide comparative information about the plans. These will be conducted in a manner similar to CAHPS. I guess the thing to know that we're developing the survey now, that 2006 will be used as a pilot, and implementation of these won't begin until 2007. With respect to electronic prescribing, on the next page, sponsors will have to support and comply with standards once final standards are in effect. There was a proposed rule put out earlier this year, and there will be what we call an initial final standards or foundation standards required by all plans for 2006. Specifically, those are that the plans must be able to accommodate the NCPDP script standard for the prescription elements, the NCPDP telecommunications standards for the eligibility determinations between the dispenser and the plan, and also the ASCX 12-270/271 version 4010 eligibility standard between the prescribed for the prescriber and the plan. So those three standards are what are called the foundation standards. The final rule is due out this fall, which will spell those out exactly what is required. And then finally, with respect to going forward, the idea is that piloting will be going on in the next couple of years because we need to establish further standards no later than April 1st, 2008. So those further standards beyond these foundation standards will be piloted to see what should become the total requirements for e-prescribing under the Medicare prescription drug benefit. Finally, with respect to quality improvement organizations, in the regulation, it's spelled out that QIOs will offer providers, practitioners, and sponsors quality improvement assistance, and this is further spelled out in the draft 8th scope of work. QIOs will have access to specified information from CMS and the Part D sponsors. I don't believe specifically what that information has been spelled out any further to date yet. That's probably something being worked on in OCSQ. And then finally, just, you know, in the regs, it does say any information collected by QIOs is subject to confidentiality restrictions like the other information that they get in the other aspects of what they do. I just would like to add that obviously you didn't hear much about quality measures here, and that's because there isn't a lot for 2006 for the Part D benefit. But the quality measures that there are contained in the final reporting requirements that were posted on April 18th. They're on our website. And they do spell out a few categories specifically for medication therapy management, for grievances, for utilization management, with respect to appeals, and then also some customer service call center requirements. It spells out in those reporting documents what we'll be asking them to report to us. But that is the extent for 2006 of the quality measures with respect to Part D. And that's all I have.
All right, so we're ready for any questions, Janice.
Does anybody in the room have questions? I know I do. Lanny?
Maybe?
Can you hear her?
No.
Nope.
You know what, I think you'll have to come up and talk in the phone.
Tell us who you are, too, please.
Hi. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Verizon is working. On the Part D, how are you looking at how is the medication therapy, medication management program going to be reported?
Yeah, basically, there isn't a lot of reporting on there on their results because we don't necessarily have standards to measure it by, but what they had to submit to us already is a detailed plan description of what they're going to do. But the reporting requirements that are specific to MTM really aren't necessarily about the results that they're getting, but it's going to be more focused on how many people enrolled, how many people disenrolled, how many were participating, and what the per member per month costs are for those that are participating in MTM. So it's limited to that for 2006.
Okay. I guess I'm not very clear on, you have set up in your slides some requirements that you have to have, like, for example, you know, brown bags and that type of thing.
Those aren't requirements. Those were just examples of what MTM could be.
Right, but
yeah.
If you participate or your plan has this type of program, I guess my question is, how are these going to be reported to you, is what I'm missing. Are there supposed to be a document that is supposed to be submitted to you that this is our program for this year?
Yes, they had to submit that by April 18th. They've already done that.
Okay.
So it describes the program in total. You know, this is the interventions. We'll be, in other words, they had to submit to us for, you know, for diabetics with congestive heart failure taking five or more medications. We will be doing an initial live consultation or phone consultation with each one of these, and this is what we anticipate. If we find, we'll do this, this, and this. That was the type of information we were looking for them to submit to us. Now, some of it, you know, it's the full range there because we didn't have specific minimum requirements. Some, I think you'll find that there are some plans that are going to do pretty extensive medication therapy management if you're thinking of it in terms of, you know, consultative services and whatnot. And there are others maybe that aren't going to be as robust in year one. And again, our position has been that's okay, if you will. Our goal is to move this forward slowly in the right way, but that MTM, maybe we won't have many more requirements until the 2008 year.
Okay. And I have a question on the QI program. If you have, if your plan has MAPD enrollees, special needs plan enrollees, and PPO enrollees, can you report your HEDIS, CAP, and HOS together, or do they have to be reported separately?
There are different mechanisms for HEDIS, HOS, and CAPS. If the special needs plan is going to be required to participate in those programs, HEDIS goes through NC. Well, it's all done through NCQA, but HEDIS, you submit your data directly to NCQA. CAPS survey is done actually by CMS. So it's our contractor. And then for HOS, I think you're involved in contracting with an approved vendor for the HOS survey.
Correct. So I guess it will be up to NCQA to tell us whether to report them separately or not. Is that what you're saying?
Well, they're separate systems for them, yeah. So NCQA or a CMS contractor will be dealing with that separately.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, let us know your name and who you're with for future questions.
My name is Lonnie Allison. I'm the Vice President for Quality Improvement for Managed Health, Inc. 83359.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Anyone else in the room have questions? Tony, I had some questions. The Chapter 5 update, which is going to lay out the quality requirements, that is forthcoming?
Yes.
In the fall, or?
I don't know a precise date. I think in the near future we're going to be sharing a draft as we do on all of our chapters with the industry for comment, and presumably it will get finalized this fall.
And then the other question is, if folks have feedback or suggestions on national topics for projects or just general questions about implementation, should they send them to your email address?
That's fine.
Okay. All right. And then a last question to Craig. Craig, you mentioned a web address for the reporting requirements for Part D. Do you happen to have that?
You know, I don't. It's at, you know, it's at cms.hhs.gov, and then if you go into the
Medicare Reform.
Or Medicare Modernization Act.
Medicare
Reform. Okay.
You go into Medicare Reform, and it's a few steps down. You need to get into the prescription drug benefit, and then it'll be Part D reporting requirements.
We can get that to Janice, the web address.
Yeah, that's. I can email that link.
When they send that to me, I'll send it out to you, and I'll also download the materials and forward them on as well. Okay. Now, I guess I just want to go back to Lanny's question about the HEDIS reporting. I think she asked that question because right now when you're reporting your data back to MCQA, things are broken out, commercial, Medicaid, and Medicare product lines. And I don't think there are subdivisions to report out separate rates for, say, if you had special needs or different, a PPO or a Medicare PPO or a Medicare. So I think maybe that's something that we all need to look into going forward about how plans would break those out as a further distinction below the Medicare.
The big issue there is because, for example, where we are, the MAPD or the LUPI, the MAPD will have the pharmacy benefit.
I didn't. I heard some of that, but not all of it.
She was saying that some of the products might have the pharmacy benefit and some might not. So there would be differences among the different products. But I don't think we're going to resolve that today. But it's just something to think of going forward. You know, I know you have many open door forum calls to get feedback as you start implementing. So it's just one of the things that you might think about. Yeah.
So let me see if I understand what you're saying. If an organization has several different types of plans, say they have an HMO and a PPO, you might be having just one set of data going to NCQA for HEDIS. You don't separate out the different types of plans then. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, I guess her question was, do you need to report those separately? Would CMS require, and then what would be the mechanism to do so?
Yeah, I presume if NCQA has been doing that to date, that we will continue that then. I don't think I fully realized that the different products were, you know, being integrated into just one report. So that's useful for me to know that. I don't have any further comments at this point. I presume we'll just continue to continue what we've been doing today. It strikes me then that that sets up a difficulty because for those PPOs that are new into the system, we might be having different kinds of reports. And I don't know how we'll deal with that part equitably, but I guess it's an issue that we'll need to think about some more then, so I appreciate the issue being raised. Am I capturing what you're saying correctly?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, good.
Any other questions in here now? Okay, I think we can, Whitney, we can check to see if the people on the phone line have any questions.
Certainly. And for the phone audience today, if you have a question, you may signal us by simply pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. Once again, that's star 1 if you have a question, and we'll pause just a moment.
It's like an open door for him.
And gentlemen, it appears that we have no questions on the phone audience today.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much, Tony, and thank you very much, Craig.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So we'll talk to Janice tomorrow then.
Tomorrow, yeah.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And that concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect the line.